Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome back. This is episode 272 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me here. If you are new to the show, each and every week we bring an episode with a top player from Magic the Gathering who has made top 8 of a Grand Prix or top 16 of a Pro Tour, or the community notables who have made an impact in our space. And we talk about their journey, their ups and downs, what they've learned along the way, and we bridge the gap between them and you, learning from them and pulling out lessons that you can use the next time you sit down to play Magic so you can achieve your dreams as well. And if you've been with the show for a while, thank you so much. I love doing this for you, and it's exciting to have you tune in each and every week to hear another amazing episode. And we do have a great guest lined up, but I do want to say that this show is brought to you by you, the listeners, specifically the patrons. Thank you so much for your support of the show. And of course, Paragon City Games. Thank you as well. ParagonCityGames.com is where you can check them out. They provide the prize support for our monthly giveaways, as well as for our leagues that we do each and every set. It's been a lot of fun being associated with Paragon City Games, and I highly recommend that you go check them out. Well, I think one of the most exciting things that happened in the Magic community this week was the unbannings that they did for Modern. That was pretty cool to see. Instead of them taking cards away, they were adding cards to the format, specifically Jace the Mind Sculptor. How cool is that? And Bloodbraid Elf. Like, that's a big deal. So I'm really excited to see what happens in future Modern events, and I'm sure there's going to be lots of people who try and jam those Jaces back in there because they're super powerful, and we'll see if the answers that exist now are able to keep him in check. So I think it's a lot of fun to be able to use the cards that we actually have, and I think it's great that Wizards is, you know, doing an unbanning instead of a banning so we can see how this format shakes out. Granted, I'm also pretty happy because I have, you know, a Jace of Mind Sculptor from the Vault 20 set. And it's nice to see that actually have a little bit of value in the sense that I can actually play it in a format that I'm actually familiar with. So that'd be kind of fun. Anyways, well, let's dive into today's episode. We have a great guest lined up. So without further ado, let's talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a longtime Magic the Gathering grinder who started playing in the Scars of Mirrodin Innistrad block. He has 2 PPTQ wins, made top 20 at GP San Antonio, and is the champion of GP Santa Clara. Coming to us from Austin, Texas, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, John Martin. John, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, Sean. How are you doing, man?
Fantastic. Thank you. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take the game to the next level?
Yeah, definitely. Let's do it.
Excellent. Now, prodigies, you want to connect with John, you can find him on Twitter at HardcastNarco. And that's where you can say thanks for being on the show, ask him a question, and find him on socials, and you know, follow with him there, HardcastNarco on Twitter. So, John, tell us a little bit about you outside of Magic. Are you born and raised in Austin, Texas?
Yes, I was.
Excellent. And what are you doing out there? Are you going to school? Are you working?
I'm going to school right now. Nice. I took about 4 years off. I actually started at Texas A&M. And that's where I met my teammate, Jeremy Fry, at. And we started playing Magic together up there. But I dropped out because I hated the college and wasn't really sure about what I wanted to do. And I was like starting to get more focused on Magic at the time. So I just kind of like decided to take a bunch of time off. And now I'm back. I'm going to Texas State. It's going really well. Excellent. I have like a year less.
What are you studying?
I'm getting my degree in business finance.
Nice. That's great. My degree is in business entrepreneurship.
So, oh, really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I have my degree. That's really cool. And your teammate, Jeremy, great guy. He is a past guest of the show. We had him on a few episodes ago. So it's pretty cool to have you on as well. And then who was the third partner you guys had?
William Ho. Yeah. We met him when Jeremy and I both moved to Austin relatively around the same time. And then we met Will just through like grinding events up here and everything.
Excellent, excellent. And together you make the trio champion of GP Santa Clara.
Yeah, pretty sick. We were not planning on winning that event, and somehow we did. So worked out well for us.
Oh, man. If you make me laugh, I'm going to cough because I've been having a cough for the past couple of days. Triggered by a laugh. So that's, I mean, it's settled down to where it only triggers when I laugh. So that's kind of funny. Well, that's great. We're glad to have you on, and maybe we'll get Will on one of these days to round out the big old team here. And, but tonight's about you, and we're going to be chatting about your history with Magic and how you got into the game and all that good stuff. So take us back in time and tell us the story. We really want to be there smelling the cards with you, looking over your shoulder. Tell us about the first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards.
Very first time was back in Onslaught. I was like super young. I think I was in, pretty sure I was in like fifth or sixth grade. But my cousins at the time, we were living with them, and they were like, they were in high school, and they were buying like Onslaught cards and everything. And I vividly remember having a whole bunch of like Onslaught foil fetches, and then just trading them for slivers at the time, because I thought like the sliver mechanic was so cool.
Yeah, that's one of those stories that you look back and go, ouch.
Yeah, bad beats. But so after that, I've always been into card games. But I didn't really do anything with card games until I got into college, and then I started playing Magic back in Innistrad and Scars of Mirrodin right before Scars rotated out. And and then from there, I just kind of got more competitive. Like, as soon as I figured out that there was a competitive scene in the Pro Tour and everything, I was like, all right, well, we're going to try and get on it. So
cool.
Years of grinding, and we finally got there.
Very neat. So your first set ever was Onslaught?
Yeah.
And you said your cousins at the time, so they're not your cousins anymore?
We don't really talk to them anymore. I distance myself from that side of the family.
Oh, my gosh. You're killing me. That's pretty funny, because you said my cousins at the time we were living with them. So I was just teasing with you, and you actually – that's kind of funny. Anyway, so – okay. So since you started playing Magic – oh, my gosh, it's going to be hard. Since you started playing Magic, what's been your favorite set?
All-time favorite, probably Return to Ravnica.
Return to Ravnica?
Yeah. Okay. It's just like – it's a super enjoyable set for me. Like, we had a – it's like where I really started getting competitive. So I like was super into it. And then, and like Thragtusk Restoration Angel, that was like my favorite thing to be doing. I'm a filthy degenerate. Like, if the deck's powerful, I'm just going to play it.
Good for you.
It's going to be fun. So
dude, that's fun for you. And that's awesome. Like, you know, I'm similar. Like, oh man, if it works, I want to do it. You know, like when I learned about, Narset Infinite Turns and Commander, I'm like, yes, please. And everyone's like, oh no, that sounds terrible. I'm like, no, that actually sounds amazing. You know why? Because it means I'll win. So
yeah, exactly.
So I'm with you there. What about favorite card? Do you have one, or at least you're one of?
All-time favorite card is Restoration Angel.
Okay.
Simply, like, I think that card is like ridiculously broken for the casting costs.
So for those of us who might not know, what is it? What does it do? And then tell us why you like it.
So it's a 4-mana, 1-white, 3-colorless, 3/4. It's an angel, so it has flying, of course, and then it also has flash. And when it enters the battlefield, you can exile target creature you control and then return it to the battlefield under its controller's ownership. So the big thing with that card is that you get to flash it in with a card called, at the time, it was like a card called Thragtusk, which was a 5-mana, 1-green, 4-colorless, 5/4. And when Thragtusk enters the battlefield, you gain 5 life. And then when he leaves the battlefield, you get a 3/3 beast token. So it was this really powerful, really busted interaction. And I played it in like every deck for like 2 years, as long as it was in standard four. I loved it so much.
Yeah. Man, that's a lot of fun. Having those little interactions and those memories to look back on. And so when you started getting more serious about Magic, talked about your early beginnings, and then you mentioned getting into the competitive scene. What was an early challenge that you struggled with, but that you eventually overcame?
I'm a very prideful person. So being in a room full of Magic players, like take Jeremy, for instance, he's been playing almost twice as long as I have. So his knowledge is just so much more vast than mine. So I really had to overcome my pride in being like, okay, well, I'm the smartest person, and just sitting down and being like, well, I'm probably like the least smart person at this table. So just really focusing on playing every game to the best of my ability and learning how to get better and not getting frustrated with myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like you said, just realizing that, hey, I'm not the smartest person here and I can learn from them. And that was kind of what you banged up against early on.
Yeah, definitely. Like it was really difficult because I'm competitive by nature. I played 4 years of lacrosse in high school, basketball in middle school. So I've always had like that outlet. And then once I got into Magic, it wasn't so much about my physicality as much as about like the mental aspect of it. And it was really difficult for me at the time to be like, well, I know I'm good enough. It's just like, how do I get there? And
yes.
I would get really frustrated early on.
So what did you do to overcome that? Like, how did you start connecting with people? Like, what was that journey like for you?
I made the conscious decision to kind of be like, I want to get better. How do I get better? So I was like, well, I got to set my pride aside. I have to realize that they're going to teach me more than just me going out and playing games against like my roommates for fun at like the kitchen table. So really just putting yourself around people who want to win, who want to get better, that mindset and that kind of team spirit, I guess, that really helps, I think, in the long run of like getting there, having your big break, whether it be a PBDQ or like a GP day two, whatever it is. So,
yeah, very cool. And now, knowing what you know now, what would you share to someone who is just starting to get into the competitive scene that would kind of shortcut the learning curve?
Honestly, I don't think there is a shortcut. Like, everyone wants to know, like, especially now with the GP win, like, people want to know what we're doing differently. Like, because the week after we won the Grand Prix, Jeremy and Will also top aided SEG, and that was a team event as well. And they're like, wow, what are you guys, like, everyone's messaging us, like, what are you doing differently? What's your secret? And there really isn't a secret. It's just, if that's what you want, you need to just put the work in, you know, surround yourself with like-minded people and just grind.
Yeah.
And like eventually you'll start seeing the results. Also a big thing I think is trying not to be results oriented. Like if you go to a Grand Prix, like I went to GP Houston 2 weeks ago and I scrubbed out. I came off my buys and then lost three in a row. And I was like, okay, cool. But like, you can't let that get to you because you're not going to win every tournament. You're not going day two every tournament. I mean, over half the field of the pros at the PT this weekend didn't day two. So,
yeah. Yeah, man, that's so true. Like, don't, yeah. And having that realization, understanding that, and living it and coming to grips with it is tough, you know, for many people to know, hey, like, some weekends I can be really good and some weekends I don't do really well. But that doesn't mean that me as a player am any worse than I was before. It just means that whatever reason, you know, variance is always the go-to or whatever, but there's always something that you can learn from it. You can look at it and say, hey, what could I have done differently and whatnot? But just understand that, you know, as long as you put in the effort, like you said, then your skill level will stay there and you just got to be consistent with your appearance and then, you know, play your best each game and the results will come.
Yeah, exactly. Like a big thing that I've started doing is I tend to like think a lot on my opponent's turn and I think that I have all the lines figured out. And I'm like, okay, I processed all the information. I got this. But now I'll put a dice on top of my library. And it's not to remind me of triggers. It's to remind me to slow down. Hmm. Like I'll draw for my turn and I'll take like 30 seconds and I'll think about all my lines I'm going to take this turn, what land I'm going to play. And playing, I don't want to call it slow play, but slowing down your pace and thinking about it, that makes your decisions better. And you'll start to see better results, I think, just because of that. Because you're thinking through things more clearly, like taking a deep breath and that type of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. So as you went through your journey, you know, starting from, you know, just getting into the competitive scene and then all the events you've been at since then and up to your recent successes, you've had ups and downs along the way. What would you say has been your worst Magic moment and what did you learn from that experience?
I think the worst Magic moment was right before Santa Clara. There were a string of events, string of PPDQs, other Grand Prix I had gone to, and I had not been doing well. I hadn't day two'd a GP in 7 or 8 months, and school was picking up, and like I was taking time off on the weekends to like actually try and have a social life and not like play Magic or anything. I was just kind of like, I was really feeling done. I was feeling like defeated, and I told Jeremy and Will going into Santa Clara, I was like, I think this is my last event. I'm done after this. Like I've tried for, you know, 5 years to get on the PT. I don't think it's going to happen. And then, I mean, lo and behold, we wind up winning the whole thing. And I'm like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
I guess that's not happening anymore. All right. Awesome. But yeah, I mean, that was really hard. Like, especially day one, because we got an unintentional draw at round one on day one, and then we lost round three. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't lose anymore to day two. And like, I was I was down. I was just so done. And then we wound up winning out, and we had some lucky breaks and some really tough spots. And it went our way after that all weekend. So,
Wow. So before we dive into that, so the period right before that you said that you're, you know, contemplating, you know, hanging up your hat and whatnot, what you talked a little bit about kind of the situation that was going on to have you feel like that. What can you take away now looking back on it that maybe you can share with other Magic players who might be going through something similar?
I mean, the biggest thing is, I think, knowing when you have to take a step back. Because, mm-hmm. I think any competitive Magic player, anyone who wants to grind and get on the Pro Tour, like, that's something that's internal. That's in you. You know that you're good. You know that's what you want. But I think that it really does. It takes time. It takes events. And, like, sometimes you really do have to just say, you know, like, I got to take a step back from this for a moment. And everyone goes through it. I mean, I've taken plenty of breaks in my Magic career where I'm just like, you know, I won't play for 6 months at a time. I won't even go to an event or touch a card. And then I'll come back and I feel rejuvenated. And, you know, try and like find another outlet, something else to do, and go do it. Relax a little bit, get your head out of the game. Because, like, stuff like that really helped me whenever I was, like, really struggling with, like, even top eighting a PBTQ. Like, I was just like, okay, I'm going to go play basketball for, like, 2 weeks and disappear.
Yeah. That's good. So be conscious and mature enough to know when you need a break and when you can step back. And that doesn't mean that, again, doesn't mean that you're a failure or anything like that. It just means that you are giving yourself a little bit of space to recharge, and then you can come back to Magic later and whatever that looks like, 2 weeks, 6 months, whatever. As long as you have that drive in you, you know that if you need to take a break, then that's fine. And I love that. And then have other outlets, have other things, other, you know, activities you can do, whether those are, you know, physical or you know, hanging out with other friends or whatever, so that you have something else to fill your time with other than just Magic. I think those are really good advice.
Definitely.
Cool. So now the flip side are our highs. What has been your proudest Magic moment?
GP Santa Clara, it's up there. Like that whole event, like winning a Grand Prix, I think, on your own is like, it's pretty sweet. But winning one with like your team, and just like going through that whole experience, like all the ups and downs, like day one, we were like fighting by like everything we had to just make day two to hope for like a median cash. And then when we heard the top eight and now our top four announcement, we got in by 0.15 on our tiebreakers. Wow. And like, it was crazy. It was just like everything went our way that weekend on day two. Even in like the one game we lost on day two, we wound up beating those guys in the semifinals. And it was just like, I was like, all right. Like, and I told, it's really funny. I told Jeremy and Will when we woke up the morning to go to day two on Sunday, I was like, you know, I got a feeling that we're going to win this tournament. They just kind of looked at me and laughed. And I was like, no, like, we're going to win. And
that's awesome.
You just kind of know.
Yeah.
So Santa Clara, either Santa Clara is my favorite moment or my first PBTQ win. Mm-hmm. It was Modern and I was playing Burn, but I signed up for it super last minute, and my main deck was, I think I had 59 cards. I was missing two cards. So what I did is I put a card called Day's Undoing, which is a blue card. It's one blue, two colorless. Discard your hand. You and your opponent discard your hand, shuffle your library, your graveyards into your library, and then draw seven, and then your turn ends. I put that card into Burn, and it was horrible. Like, the worst card in my deck. I never wanted to cast it, but I wound up winning the PBTQ with that in my list.
Oh my gosh.
And everyone was looking at my deck list, and they were like, why? I was like, I didn't have the two extra cards I needed, so, you know. But that was pretty sweet. That was another point where like it kind of rejuvenated me, like giving me that win.
Yeah, that's incredible. So in regards to the Grand Prix, this was your, this is going to be your first time going to Pro Tour. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Awesome. And it's, what is it? It's Pro Tour 25, the Fermented 25. Is that the one?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Cool. It's the team event too. Mm-hmm. So it's team trios. So Will, Jeremy, and I were just like, oh, cool. We get to run it back. So they'll probably put me on modern again, since that's like my best format, and we'll figure out standard again.
So is that, yeah. So what was the breakdown for your team for Santa Clara?
Yeah, so Jeremy was on Legacy. Okay. He's a big-time Legacy guy.
Yeah. He talked about that on his interview. I forgot, yeah.
Yeah, he loves it. But he's really proficient with Grixis Delver. I think he's been playing it for, like, I don't know, 5 years now or something. And then Will and I kind of got to pick and choose. And I was flip-flopping a lot, and I was really frustrated because I was like, man, like, I was playing robots leading up to the event, or Affinity. And I was like, man, I'm just not going to do well. Like, this deck just isn't well positioned. But I had enough experience with Dredge to where they were like, just play Dredge, get your free wins, we'll be okay. And then Will really carried. I mean, that guy put in so much work on Standard and figuring out how to beat the Tamir match in Standard and everything. So props to him, but yeah. And we'll probably just do that again. Like, I trust Will and I trust Jeremy to play to the best of their abilities at the PT. So
cool, man. That's gonna be exciting. When is that?
It's in August. We have 9 months before it. It was so frustrating. Like, I was really excited. I was like, oh, cool, we get to go to Dominaria, and they're like, no, you guys have to wait till August. I was like, oh, come on,
wow,
man.
Yeah. Is it because they wanted to line up the team GP to the team Pro Tour?
Yeah, that's what it is. So all the team GPs this year, QU for Magic 25. And I think they're doing that just because it's easier to, you know, say, oh, I have my group of friends, my teammates already. So,
but yeah, that is cool. So we need to see how that plays out. But it does suck for you to have to sit through two Pro Tours on the way to there. So, yeah. For sure.
It's pretty rough, especially because this last, like, we're going to Minneapolis, but this last one was in Spain, and I'm just like, can we go somewhere cool?
Somewhere like outside the U.S., yeah. Yeah.
Like, my roommate, Kevin, he won GP Dallas last year, and he got to go to Dublin for his Pro Tour, and I'm just like, come on.
That's funny. So how many Pro Points do you have now this season?
Right now I'm at 6. If I can go, I'm going to, what GP am I flying to? Memphis, at the end of the month. So if I can go X5 at Memphis, it'll lock me up for bronze. But I'm going to try and make a run at silver. Good. That'll give me a second PT invite. And it won't be too difficult. I think I should be able to hit it.
That's awesome. What other events do you have lined up other than Memphis?
We have Memphis and then Phoenix in March. Mm-hmm. April, we're going to, I think April is Seattle. That'll be Legacy and Standard. It's the double GP event. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I think Vegas. And that's all that I've planned for right now. I think there's one in May as well, but can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, so plenty of opportunities to pick up some pro points, and yeah, and then you have the Pro Tour, obviously, so 3 for showing up there, and that's still in this season, isn't it? Or is it next season?
Yeah, okay. The Pro Tour will be the actually very last event of the season, so I'm hoping, I mean, if I can just lock up bronze, that'll give me an invite to every RPTQ for the year, so like that alone is huge, but you know, we're hoping to go 11 wins. That gives you the invite to the next Pro Tour as well. So
excellent. Oh, that's so exciting. That is really, really cool, man. Well, best of luck. Like, we love watching past guests do great things. I mean, it's so exciting. Like, just this past weekend, Luis Savato, he won the Pro Tour, and he's been a past guest of the show, so that's always exciting.
Oh, really?
For,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's always like, oh, so cool to like see them go off and do great things. And even like in the 8th spot, Andrea Mengucci, like, he's been on the show too. It's just so cool, like, interviewing people like you, their first Grand Prix win and going off the first Pro Tour, and then a couple years later they're winning Pro Tours, and so it's really, really exciting. So yeah, so good luck this season, and you know, picking that up, and definitely look forward to having you on more as the years go by. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully I don't have to wait a year to win my Pro Tour.
Yes,
hopefully we can just like go there in August and somehow luck sack our way through.
Love it. That'd be great. So, I mean, obviously you've played a lot of Magic. You said off and on, you've been to lots of different events and different sizes and whatnot. What would you say has been the biggest mistake that you see players make, that you observe?
Not willing to admit when they made a mistake in the game. Because at tournaments, whenever you finish your round, you normally will chit-chat with your opponent for a little bit. And I hear it all the time, and I'm guilty of it too occasionally, is just being really short with my opponent, thinking that we have it all figured out. But getting their perspective on why they made a certain play, even if it's like 100% the wrong play, getting that knowledge and understanding, that helps you further on. Magic is all about the amount of knowledge that you have. And the more knowledge you have, the better you're going to be. That's why, take Seth Manfield, for instance. He's been playing for 15 plus years. Like, his knowledge is so, so vast. And that's why he's having all these results back to back, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's doing so well. It's because he's talked to people, he's learned, and he's just accumulated so much. So I think even when you're frustrated and you're upset, just looking at your opponent and trying to, like, talk to them or work through a difficult line that they had or you had, and then getting their opinion and perspective on it, that helps a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just, for me, Magic comes down to, like, your hubris. Just like, accept that you're not the best person in the room. Know that you're not. You're probably never going to be. And then just learn what you can from it.
Mm-hmm. I love it. That's very true. And I know I struggle with that. Like, you know, I always thought, oh, hey, depending on the mood of my opponent, you know, I'll chat with them or talk or whatever. But it really comes down to my mood, you know, because maybe, you know, their mood is just projection of mine and it's a cycle or whatever. And so just being positive and humble and just being willing to talk, hey, like, what was the hardest line, you know, during that game, either yours or mine? And just, you know, having a little brief discussion, I think, will go a long way for players of all levels, no matter what event they're at. So that's good advice.
Yeah, definitely. It helps a lot. Like, there have been so many times where, like, I've been, like, lost in a sea of thoughts. I'm like, I don't know how to win this game. And then I wind up winning because my opponent made a mistake on their turn or something. And then that just, I'm like, oh, sweet. That helped me so much.
Oh, man. Crazy. So is there, not is there, because I know there is, what is an aspect of Magic that you have been able to apply to other areas of your life?
I would say critical thinking.
How so?
I think that one just kind of jumps ahead, just because I'm in college at the moment, and like, I'm finishing up my junior year. So a lot of my business courses and everything, that I have, like, so much stuff to do, and but being able to just think at, like, I guess a higher function than just going to class and writing things down. I think that carries over a lot from Magic, because my mental, my mental strength is a lot more than just, it's higher than normal college kids, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really, I can definitely see how being regular with Magic can increase your mental capacity, and, you know, being able to apply that to something like college would be a big benefit, because you're able to, you know, hold more information and then analyze it and then, you know, make a, like you said, think about it critically, make a decision. And I can definitely see that being a big, big benefit. That's cool.
Yeah, like, I took a biology test today before the interview, and I was sitting there taking it, and I was like, okay, well, like, obviously, like, these five answers aren't right, so it has to be this one. And I think just being able to see the different decision trees and being able to evaluate stuff, that'll help a lot in, like, people's everyday lives. Yeah. Also, like, I tend to play decks that require a lot of math, and you know, that just kind of just helps you be more intelligent or more critically aware, I guess.
Yeah, that's cool. And what would you say is your best format, John?
Modern by far. Ooh. Simply because it's not like Standard, where Standard is very dependent on your opening seven plus the top five cards of your library. Modern, you're able to, one, do more powerful things, and also manipulate the deck and the game state a little bit more. So, you know, that's why the guys put me on Modern. So...
Love it. That's cool. So what do you play in Modern right now?
Right now I'm still on Dredge. I actually did an article on Reddit and I got a lot of feedback, and seemed like people really liked it. But yeah, I did an article over my Wayne deck list and the few cards I would change on Dredge, and kind of just like some how-tos on how to play the deck.
Cool.
And everything.
So you would say that's working right now, a winning strategy in Modern would be Dredge?
Yes and no.
Good answer. So, it is modern after all.
Yes. Dredge is a very funny deck. It's very dependent on not only your opponents having an adequate amount of hate, but also your ability to play around the hate. And that's one of the things I talked about in my article was, you know, Dredge itself is not a very complicated deck. You do essentially one thing over and over again until you just hit a critical mass of creatures to kill your opponent. The complicated part comes from being able to play around the hate correctly. Like if you actually go back and watch my the last game against VD in the finals of Santa Clara, Jeremy turns to me and he's like helping me through the game, and it's like turn two and we're deciding if we can be slow and like play around Rest in Peace or if we just have to like go all out here and hope that we hit big. And we decided to go all out. VD, I think, missed his white land for two or three turns, and then that put us like pretty far ahead and gave us the winning position. But yeah, I love Dredge. Sorry, I could talk about that deck all day.
No, that's great, because one of the things I love to do is figure out, you know, what's our guest's best format and then what's working in that format right now, and then strategies against and for that. So obviously I was going to, you know, so the question, you know, how do you fight against Dredge? The hate is really important. Rest in Peace, is that pretty much a slam dunk?
Not really. So okay. Rest in Peace is actually very good for if your opponent's on Rest in Peace. It's very good for them if they're on the play. And that was one of the things I was really worried about in my match against VD, is that game two, he was on the play. So game, like our turn one, we're basically just going to cast Faithless Looting, draw two cards, and then get our engine set up. But his turn two, he can just go like white land, Rest in Peace, and then we're just hard casting everything for the rest of the game, trying to find an answer. And then if you're on the draw, if your opponent's on the draw and they're playing Rest in Peace, it's not nearly as bad because you have two turns to be able to not only get your engine set up, but also to vomit 3/3s and 2/1s onto the battlefield. And normally that's about enough.
Wow.
Also, people keep like pretty bad hands. Like there's actually a lot of debate amongst my friends whether or not VD kept a good hand, because his hand was like, he was on the play, he mulliganed to six. It was Celestial Purge, Double Island, Saren Visions, Rest in Peace, and I think Detention Sphere, which I think that hand is fine. So he goes like scry, bottom, Saren Visions, draw a card, scry, bottom, bottom, and then pass, and he gets a draw for his turn. So he had like six looks at getting a white land.
Yeah,
he never did. But, you know, sometimes your opponents will keep hands like that, and you get lucky, or you just have like the perfect storm of cards that put you ahead of your opponent.
Yeah. Okay, cool. That's cool. So what answers does Dredge have to hate against it?
I'm like, a lot of people will say like Nature's Claim is a good answer for like Rest in Peace, Grafdigger's Cage, Relic of Progenitus. Me personally, I am actually very high on Golgari Charm right now, because that card is, it's only two extra or one extra mana than Nature's Claim, but it has three modes that have been so good for me over the last like 2 weeks. Every time I play Modern, like I was playing against a Scapeshift opponent, and that's a really hard matchup because they just have so many Anger of the Gods, and they get Relic of Progenitus, and then they can just like combo finish you out of nowhere. But he went Anger of the Gods to like, I think I had like, I don't know, close to like 15 power on board. And I went Golgari Charm, regenerate all my creatures, and like the game just ended. But the modes on that card are very, very good. Thoughtseize is also a great option for breaking up hate.
Okay.
I don't like that card nearly as much, but you have to play it just because it is the absolute best answer that you have in the deck for like, if you're on the draw and they keep a Rest in Peace and you get Thoughtseize on turn one, take your Rest in Peace. Okay, I'm probably going to win this game.
Cool.
And then Surgical Extraction, you know, you can't really play around. Like, you have a little bit of play if you have a, the reason why we play the cycle land in the deck is so that when people go Surgical, take your Life from the Loam or whatever dredger, you're hoping to just cycle, get the dredger out of your yard, and then they whiff on their Surgical.
Hmm. Clever. Yeah, that's good. That's a good workaround. Man, that's cool. See, I love how people who know their deck backwards and forwards can have these. They know exactly what's in it and what's it there for, and the lines of play, and that's really fun. That I can tell that you really know your stuff. That's cool.
Yeah, I think modern, more so than standard, just because modern's meta is, I'm going to say, relatively undefined at all times. That you can, if you play one deck proficiently, you will do well with that deck no matter what. So, anyone looking to get into modern, pick one deck, play 5,000 games with that, and I promise you, you will have success.
Awesome. Even if that deck goes in and out of favor?
Yeah, I mean, Dredge, I played Dredge at one of my GP Las Vegas last summer, and that was when Eldrazi Tron was built really big, and that's a really bad matchup for Dredge. Mm-hmm. But I played it, and I missed day two by like one match, and it actually came down to my opponent having not one rest in peace, but not one Relic of Progenitus, but four Relic of Progenitus, which I was like, okay, he had all four of them. I just can't beat that in a million years.
That's funny. So yeah, so find that deck and stick with it. And especially something like modern with the decks being, it's not so easy to just be like, well, I'm just going to build this deck. You know, like it's a little bit more of a commitment to build your deck. So find the one that you like and then just stick with it, you know, and modern's interesting, it ebbs and flows, and you know, you might be playing your favorite deck at a time when it's not, you know, the best, you know, for the metagame or whatever, but it'll come back around, you know, a couple more tournaments later, it'll come back around. So like I love Abzan colors, and so like the Abzan company, for example, that Coco company, that was like my favorite, you know, interactions and whatnot. And so, you know, I still play around with those Abzan colors, and there's always something to do with those colors in modern. It's just a matter of being proficient and sticking with it and practicing. And so, like you said, just become super familiar with your deck, and you know, you're good to go no matter what time of year it is. So
yeah, definitely. I mean, Reed Duke top eighted the Pro Tour this past weekend with Abzan midrange, and like that, I don't know if you saw this, it was the sickest game of Magic I've ever seen. Like Reed Duke is like, he's a master.
Yeah.
But he went to one multiple times against his humans opponent for his winning in for top eight. And like, and he just had no fear. He was like, all right, attack with my Tarmogoyf, like make you have it. Like, and every time he made that play out, I was like, Reed, like you're crazy, man. Like I would like shell up and just like hope to find an answer for what my opponent's doing.
Yeah. That's me. I'm like you. I'm like, I shell up when I get down. I'm like, oh my gosh. So yeah, it's cool. It's really cool watching, you know, I mean, they're pros for a reason, right? It's really cool watching them play and thinking, okay, they're doing something different than what I would do, and then dive into that. You know, if you're watching Magic and you see somebody who you respect do something different than what you would do, you should really say, okay, why, you know, and try and figure that out and dive into it. And yeah, and that's a good learning point for everybody right there. So
yeah, I was going to say, I do that a lot. Like we'll, our team will save clips from Twitch, and anytime, like we went back and we analyzed like Reed Duke's decision trees from that game, and that stuff just helps so much. Like it goes back to the whole talking to your opponent about decisions, like just trying to get all that knowledge as much as you can. That will help you just be a better Magic player.
Yeah, I really think that outside stuff is, it's so easy not to do, right? People just sit down and play and then they move on, kind of like what you were saying earlier. But it's that post-game analysis that's really important. Whether you do it on your own or someone else's, I think having that discussion with other people is really beneficial, and I don't think enough people take advantage of that.
Definitely.
Yeah, for sure. Now, do you have any habits that may be Magic or not Magic related that you feel help contribute to your success?
This is really funny. I don't want to come off as like big macho man, but I was beginning of last year, beginning of 2017, I was 230 pounds. And so I started working out. I've been working out for almost a year now, and I'm down to like 165, 170.
Wow.
But yeah, but working out and dieting, that stuff has actually just helped me so much, not just physically, but mentally. When I sit down at the table, especially for these long events like Grand Prix, you know, I'll bring three bottles of water with me. I'll stay hydrated. I'll go take a nap somewhere if I need to in between rounds, if I have time. Like these little things, working out and everything, it's been proven to help increase cognitive thinking. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's a lot of things that like people don't think about so much is your physical health really does play into how you're going to do in Magic. There's a reason why League of Legend pros, for instance, like they're required to work out by their contract, and that's because it helps keep them not only like physically in shape, but mentally tuned and everything.
I love that. That's cool. And what resources do you turn to when you're keeping your finger on the pulse of Magic?
So I check out, I normally do a lot of Channel Fireball. I think that they just have a better quality of content versus Star City. MTG Goldfish, I use a lot for deck lists. And TCG Player, I really respect Brian Bronduin and Seth Manfield, and they both write for TCG Player. So normally any articles by them, you can find really good sustenance in there. Mm-hmm. And basically everything on Channel Fireball is pretty spot on. SEG, I think, appeals more towards whatever their agenda is with whatever cards they're wanting to push. So
interesting. Yeah, good point. Well, man, that's cool. So I usually ask, you know, tournament day tips, but you already covered that. You mentioned you stay hydrated and you rest when you can, and taking care of your physical body helps take care of your mind as well. So that's really neat. And I love hearing, you know, what has helped you outside of Magic, or what outside things have helped you, you know, in Magic, and covered your best format and your favorite deck and some strategies inside and around that. So it's pretty cool. And as we kind of round the corner to close things out, what is a final piece of advice that you might have for that you have already said that you want to emphasize, or something new you want to do with us here at the end?
If you want the Pro Tour, and like, believe me, I was like probably like everyone listening to this, I was one of those guys that like, I wanted it and I had dreamed about it. I always dreamed about winning a Grand Prix and just like trying my hardest. Like, just don't quit. Even when like you feel like you are just done and you have nothing left in a tank and you've given so much, like eventually it will come. Like, if you put in the work, if you dedicate yourself to this, like it'll come. You'll happen. You'll have that break, whether it's a PPTQ win, a top 8 or a top 4 at an RPTQ, or like even a random GP win to like in Santa Clara of all places. Like, eventually you have that break. And when you get that break, like, run with it. Like, as soon as we got back, I got in touch with my shop owner that sponsored us for the event. I said, okay, like, we're going to start building a brand. And, you know, you take off, you do interviews like this, you get your name out there. Like, if you want it, work for it. Don't let it go. Don't just sit around, play kitchen table Magic, you know, buy into MTGO, play games like all times when you can, and just grind. Like, if you want it, you'll get it eventually.
Ooh, absolutely love it. Thank you so much. And I want to remind the Prodigy, if you want to connect with John, you can find him on Twitter at HardCastNarco. And John, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. And thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences with us today. Like I said, I'm super excited for you, and I can hear in your voice that you are running with it and you're ready to go. And I just want to let you know that I think you are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. And you never be man screwed. Always draw what you need and depart your plane victorious.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, man. It was a blast.
Thank you again, John. Loved having you on the show. Prodigies, thank you so much for tuning in. Episode 272 is all wrapped up. And of course, you can get the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/John Martin. And as we close things out, I want to say another thank you to the patrons who make the show possible, as well as to Paragon City Games for their support. And hope you get out there and play some Magic. I look forward to hearing your stories in the Facebook group. So come join us there and tell us what you did this weekend. So whether that's Friday Night Magic or a bigger event, let us know what you played and what you did. And feel free to ask for some feedback. And we love to chat in that group. It's been a great experience to see Prodigy's journeys progress. And I can't wait to hear about yours. So stay safe and be cool. Until next time, I am Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.